The Legal Lowdown on Kerry Today.
Yeah, I'm Miriam McGillicuddy, lecturer in law in the MTU and solicitor in Tralee, but it's on the line, I should say, with the Legal Lowdown. Miriam, good morning to you. Thanks for joining us again this month.
Good morning, Jerry, and good morning, listeners.
Now, lots of people have been getting in touch with us. Lots of people are taking a look at the fine print and the legal print, where they can get it in terms of their utility bills, in terms of energy, in terms of switching, contracts that they're in, duration of all of that. So a lot to look at in this area, Miriam.
Yes, and people are going to be looking much more carefully at their contracts and in relation to utility bills. There is a right to switch services, and the Commission for Regulation of Utilities has a great website in relation to enhanced protections that are coming in this winter and for consumers, and also in relation to they've recommended three websites where you can key in your details and get, recommendations as to which would be the best and cheapest supplier for you to use. I suppose in relation to contracts for services, they have to be, provided with proper care and attention. Whoever is providing it must have the necessary skills to do the service. Any materials they use should be sound and fit for purpose. Although with utilities, very often you're dealing with maybe one company that's providing your hard lines and all that kind of thing, and another then that's providing the actual service through the lines. So often you might be dealing with two different groups there. And then any goods they supply should be of acceptable quality. But certainly, I mean, most of our contracts now, when we sign up for utilities, it'll be online, whether it's in writing or an online email contract. It's still legally binding, but interestingly, if it's done over the phone with the utilities provider, they have to have a recording or send you something in writing, otherwise they can't enforce the contract. So that's just an interesting point there.
Because that was an issue a couple of years ago with verbal contracts and people calling over the phone and saying yes, then it was very hard for the consumer to get access to that stuff or get anything in writing about their contract.
But they must have it available in some recorded form, either in writing or otherwise. And if they don't, then the contract cannot be enforced. So that's why we've, a lot of businesses now, they warn us that they're recording the call and that they should have a recording of the contract we had with them. And like, the question is, did they notify us like that we were tying ourselves into a 5-year contract, or that we'd, they weren't giving it, they were waiving the right to cancellation or something awful like that. Because in most contracts now, you're signing up, but they have to put a reasonable period on it. It might be 12 months or 24 months, but you need to be very clear about that, because if you want to switch, there may be some penalty if you try to switch within the contract period, so you need to be careful about that as well. The other point, I suppose, as I say, you have the right to switch and switch easily, and they can't restrict that. And as I say, there's a new enhanced consumer protection measures coming in for the winter, which will put moratorium on disconnection this winter, which is great, from 1st of December to 28th of February. But having said all that, Jerry, the important thing is not to fall into arrears, because I know there's going to be provisions that they can extend the arrears over longer periods. If you're a pay-as-you-go customer, they can't take as much in arrears. But at the same time, we all have to keep an eye on our utility bills this winter and try to keep on top of it. Electric Ireland, many of the suppliers have a kind of an equaliser thing. You might get your bills every 2 months, but they'll take a direct debit every month. So you equalise over the year. When you've got a heavy winter period, you can level it out over the summer period, so you're paying an even amount over the year. So that's one to look out for as well.
Yeah, yeah, it certainly is. And look, there are lots of questions and questions already coming into us in relation to that. One question that I would have, and this is for Electric Ireland in particular when it comes to utility bills, there's a million customers, by far the largest. There's historic reasons for that because it was the old ESB before deregulation and before ESB networks were split and away from the commercial arm, shall we say, of electricity supply into Electric Ireland. Are there people out there who have no contracts, who've just been with them for years, going back since day dot, or is that an issue?
I would have thought they would have had some written contract at some stage, but I mean, it's interesting because if you take over, say if a house is sold and you take over the electric bill, you were very often doing it over the phone.
Yes.
And there's not a lot of formality involved, to be quite honest. So that's an interesting point. And is there actually a contract in existence? And that's a very good point.
Yeah, because I'm not sure of this. When you do switch, it's unlike, let's say, if you're switching, and let's say, unlike mobile phone contracts or broadband contracts, there can be financial penalties there, saying, well, you're in with a contract for 18 months, you're coming out after 12 months, so you have to pay the 6 months left over. That's not in place, or is it in place for utilities?
In relation to utilities, they could say that you're pulling out, but they can't make it a penalty clause, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
They could charge something for, you know, the nuisance of getting out of a fixed term contract.
So you might pay €50 for if you haven't given them 6 weeks notice or something like that.
Yeah, it should be easy enough to switch. Even if you're pulling out of some kind of a, you know, fixed term contract, they may charge you something for the breaking out of it, but ideally you're beyond your fixed term contract when you're switching. The other thing to be careful about switching is that you may not be able to switch if you have arrears on the account, because it's a red flag.
Yeah.
So make sure all your arrears are up to date,
or you can't switch
and
get a better deal with somebody else.
Yeah.
Okay, Donal gets in touch with that question. More an observation that he says people should weigh up the cost of breaking your contract versus the rate of switching and what you will save. So make sure you know that before you make the decision to switch.
Exactly.
Another listener says, my contract with AIR was increased after 6 months by €5 that's the cost of it, obviously. When I called them, I was told by AIR and also Comreg that I could change my supplier. So take it or leave it. No satisfaction. That was the situation.
That's an interesting one, and it seems like the question is, did they enter a fixed term contract or not, or was it a recurring contract? And I suppose it's looking at the fine print of the contract, the right to increase or review their amount, which I'm sure they tie into those contracts. But it's worth looking at it just to make sure that, you know, they shouldn't have raised it within 12 months, if you know what I mean.
If it's meant to be fixed, it's fixed at that price, yeah, no matter what happens.
Exactly. And the other point about it is that he could complain to AIR, first of all, go through the complaints procedure, and, you know, it may be something he could, as I said, he's taken up with the thing with Comreg, and it is a bit unsatisfactory, but he is bound by the contract at the end of the day.
Yeah,
and
that's what you have to be very...
If they've a right of review and a right to review fairly quickly, he's kind of stuck with it.
Yeah, you have to be very, very careful what you sign before you sign it and how it works from that point of view. Look, there's a difference here as well, Miriam, that people need to be aware of. The difference between credit and prepay meters, which is a feature for some people.
Yeah, that's interesting. And like, I suppose I traditionally thought that, you know, the direct debt, the direct pay-as-you-go were that bit more expensive. But with the new provisions coming in now from the Commission for Regulation of Utilities, they're trying to ensure the prepay meters are not more expensive than the credit meters. So they're a very useful way for people to keep on top of their bills. You pay as you go. There'll be the stop on disconnection during the set periods as set out by the new rules. And also that if they're taking arrears from you, they're going to be limited to 10% of the arrears. So that's a big help for the pay-as-you-go people. It's putting in the pay-as-you-go meter, and it must be topped up, as I said, before your electricity is used. So you pay in advance for your electricity, but you're keeping an eye on how much you're using. And it's probably also encourages reducing down the amount of electricity you have in the home, because you're keeping an eye on it much more than you would if you were on a credit meter. The credit meters then can be either digital or mechanical, and the networks attempt to read the meter four times a year, and then they produce two additional planned estimates in the year. Now, when we move over to smart meters, we'll have more immediate billing, because and also we'll be able to keep an eye on our consumption in the home. But what you've really got to look out for with these credit meters at the moment is that they mightn't have caught your meter for a while, and you get whacked with a huge bill. So when you actually put in your meter reading, so we should keep an eye on that and keep on top of it and put in our meter reading to our supplier regularly.
Yeah.
So that
yeah.
so that we get real bills, if you know what I mean, yeah. Not estimated bills.
More questions in here. Miriam Listener says, Jerry, when a contract rolls over without your permission, is it binding? And I suppose this is what happens. A lot of these, sometimes you wouldn't know, am I gone past the 12 months or not? Am I wrong in suggesting that the majority of them just go into a month-by-month contract on the same terms,
Miriam? That's right. And much easier to switch once you're out of the initial fixed-term period.
Okay.
You know, without any penalty or, well, without an admin charge or whatever. Yeah.
Okay. Another listener getting in touch here and says, Jerry, I got a letter from TLI telling me they'll be fitting a smart meter for me shortly. Well, TLI, first of all, are the contracted company who are doing it on behalf of ESB Networks Ireland. I have reservations about this. What choices do I have?
I mean, the plan is to put smart meters in countrywide, and that the whole idea is that we can keep an eye on our billing and that it's immediate response. In that we know how much electricity we're consuming at any period of time in the house. But, I mean, the question of is there a choice? I'd imagine all the suppliers are moving to smart meters, so the problem is that we won't have a supplier who isn't going with it.
Yes.
So I'd say we'd be left with no choice that way at the end of the day. It's an interesting point. I suppose you could hold off on it if you wanted to, but I'd say read into it a bit more. To be quite honest, they sound like a great idea. I know there's been a bit of kerfuffle in the papers about them. Will they cost us more and all that kind of thing? But I certainly, they seem to be a good idea and would probably
in principle, but in certainly principle. Not introduced in the right way, certainly, and the proposition to the people of Ireland is not very convincing so far, but that may change.
Yeah.
Miriam, we very quickly want to get to here. A listener gets in touch, and it's on a land question for a second. For the question for the legal loan, if you're trying to do a Section 49, do you need to let your brothers/sisters know family land was left to me? Now, Section 49 is adverse possession, isn't that right?
It is, yeah. That would be where he's seeking squatter's title. I presume the property is registered, so it is actually registered on a folio, but it would have been maybe registered in great-grandfather's name, and he's applying by virtue of long possession from his family. Interestingly, like, if he's applying for that, he'd have to have been in occupation more than 12 years himself at that stage. But aside from that, the land registry notified the adjoining landowners. So usually you set out in your affidavits to the land registry, in your sworn documents telling them the story of the land, you'll tell them all about who was entitled to it over the years, and then who were the last inheritors. The thing is that the brothers and sisters may have had a right to the land at some stage, which they've either signed over to you, or you've got the squatter's title adverse to their interests, you know, as against their interests. In that case, the land registry do on occasion, even if they've weavers from those brothers and sisters, notify them. And, you know, it's up to the land registry as to who they decide they'll notify if somebody's making a squatter's rights application. So it could be people who might have had rights and interests in the land, and it also might be the adjoining landowners.
Sure. Okay.
So those two could be the subject matter of notification by the land registry.
Okay, final brief one. Kate gets in touch. I have a query about fraud and the statute of limitations. I understand it's 5 years, but does that mean the fraud allegation has to be made in court within the 5 years, or that the charge has been formally brought to court by registered post against the accused within the 5 years?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. I'm just wondering what the 5 years applies to. It might be, because it's usually either 2, 6 or 12 both years. But
having she's suggesting five here for fraud.
Yeah, but just in relation, you see, if fraud was involved in a scenario and you didn't know about it, maybe until after the statute period, that's very often when people are going back and saying there was fraud, I didn't know about it, and now I'm going back to reverse the transaction or something of that nature. So fraud actually can be used even after the statute of limitations is up. So I'd say go along to a solicitor and get legal advice on that ASAP. Because, as I say, fraud is something, if somebody acts in a fraudulent manner and the statute expires, the fraud could be used against them in relation to that expiry period, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah, okay. All right, Miriam, listen, we're out of time. Thanks a million again for talking to us this month with the Legal Lowdown. Anyone with any queries, get them into us. We'll pass them on to Miriam for this time next month.